Start clean with Clorox, because Clorox delivers a powerful clean every time. Because messes happen. Because...
Hey, listen, remember how you told me to toss those takeout containers before we left for vacation? And you were like, I'm serious. If that leaks over the counter, it'll be a slimy abomination by the time I get back. And I was like, yeah, of course. Don't worry about it. I won't forget. Well...
Ooh, yeah, that happens. So start clean with Clorox. Use Clorox products as directed. Rinse after use if in contact with food surface.
Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast. Since 1983, Eddie Trunk has been the voice for fans of rock, hard rock, and heavy metal. A best-selling author, host of TV's That Metal Show, and seven national radio shows, including Trunk Nation, daily on Sirius XM.
Interesting.
Eddie offers the world his news-making interviews, passionate analysis, honest commentary, and who knows what else. So welcome to the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Here with you, and it's time for another edition of the Eddie Trunk Podcast. It is new every Thursday at podcastone.com and, of course, iTunes. Thank you for listening, streaming, downloading, however it is that you connect with my podcast. Appreciate you guys doing so. Hope everybody's doing well, and thank you, as always, for checking out the show and spreading the word about the podcast, bringing you all sorts of great stuff and great interviews each and every week. I'm glad you guys have been digging the stuff I've been putting out the last couple weeks. Alice Cooper, Ron Nevison, so many great ones. As you know, the Eddie Trunk Podcast is free, and we thank all our great sponsors for helping keep it free. Because of them, I can bring you this free each and every week with limited ads and at no cost to you. If you heard a sponsor that you want to try, or you forgot a sponsor, you know what to do. Go to podcastone.com, visit the Eddie Trunk Podcast page. Not only can you grab this podcast or stream it that way, you hit that killer deals button that's on my page, and you'll see some of my great sponsors there. Buy through those links. It absolutely helps us out. Same great deals, and you will also get the same great sales and opportunities. We just get credit for the purchase. We appreciate you doing that. So check those sponsors. Killer deals, the Eddie Trunk Podcast page at podcastone.com. Don't forget about Amazon as well. Be sure to use that. We are a participant in the Amazon Associates program. That is an affiliate advertising program designed to provide a means for me to earn fees by linking to Amazon.com and affiliated sites. Link to Amazon, like I said, through the Eddie Trunk Podcast page at podcastone.com. So we are back with another podcast this week that I really think you guys are going to like. Made it back from Tulsa last weekend. Had an opportunity to host a show with Tom Kiefer there that was really a lot of fun. Every time I see Tom's band, it gets better and better. He is kicking ass out there. And it's good to see a guy totally committed to what he's doing in a day and age where we have these artists that move around and jump around to a different band every week, it seems like. To see Tom just committed to this band and building it has been a really great thing to see. So had a good time hosting a show with him at the IDL Ballroom in Tulsa last Friday that was sold out. It wrapped up a great week and change in Tulsa. I want to say huge thanks to the Hard Rock in Tulsa for their hospitality, and also thanks to my friends Doug Burgess and Tom Green for having me out at the IDL, and all the great rock fans that I hung out with there in Tulsa. Next up, July 1st, I'm in Detroit to host an LA Guns show at Harpo's with Phil and Tracy. As usual, all my appearances are right on the homepage of eddietrunk.com as they come in and get confirmed. So this week on the podcast, I have for you an interview that took place on my volume show, as most of the interviews you hear on the podcast, they do originate, as I often tell you, on my radio show, my daily radio show on Sirius XM, which is live Monday to Friday, 2 to 4 p.m. Eastern Time on Channel 106 Volume. And the show replays every night, 9 to 11 p.m. Eastern, and it's on demand on the SiriusXM app. If you have SiriusXM, you know, sometimes I hear from people and they say, well, I, you know, you're on 2 to 4 in the afternoon Eastern time, or even if it's Pacific, it's 11 A to 1 P. You know, that's a bad time. I'm working. Well, guess what? The show replays every night. So there's a second chance to hear it. And guess what? If that doesn't work, if you have SiriusXM, you can grab it on your app and download it and listen to it whenever you want. So no excuse if you have Sirius or XM to not join me for Trunk Nation each and every day. And some of the interviews, or most of them that you hear on the podcast, originate on that show. This one happened about a month ago when members of Styx dropped by my studio. JY and Tommy Shaw, along with Lawrence Gowan. Originally, we thought we were going to have a lot less time with them when JY had to walk away, as you're about to hear, but he came back and rejoined us, and we had a good, nice, long hang with the guys from Styx in the studio, who have their first new album coming out in a really long time. I have the utmost respect for Styx because these guys actually play and sing everything real. In a day and age where we have so many artists putting stuff on fake tracks and fake backing tracks, and what we're hearing live we don't even know is live anymore or not, Styx actually does everything for real and puts all that work in on vocals and sounds so good still doing it. Their new album sounds real good too. It's coming out very soon, in a week or two, as a matter of fact. So I thought it would be a good time to bring you this interview. We talk about their new record. We talk about the old stuff. We talk about Damn Yankees. It's really a fun conversation. So get ready for Lawrence Gowan, Tommy Shaw, and JY of Styx on this week's Eddie Trunk podcast. As usual, eddietrunk.com is my official online home. All my appearances are there. Music news updated daily by Dana. The merch store with shirts and hats and much more. And also signed copies of either of my books directly from me. Just hit the books tab. And the Trunk Report, that is my blog. So much stuff to check out. Please check often on eddietrunk.com. And most importantly, like I said, if you want your one-stop music news, listen to me on volume and check my website, because Dana updates that every day with all the stuff you want to know about. Let's take a break right now, and then we will come back and get into it with members of Styx, three members of Styx, Tommy, JY, and Lawrence, here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So when it comes time to protecting the ones you love, I'm sure we can all agree nothing is more important than their safety. Of course it isn't. And Simply Safe helps everyone protect their loved ones, so you know that they're always safe. Each Simply Safe system is a security arsenal, expertly engineered to protect each access point in your home. You can set up the system yourself in under an hour and save hundreds on installation fees. Simply Safe is designed so that you can easily blanket your home in professional protection. 24/7 monitoring is just $14.99 a month, and there's no hidden fees, no gotchas. That's it, $14.99 a month. No long-term contracts either, folks. Simply Safe will never lock you in because they earn your business every single day. To find out why millions of Americans trust Simply Safe to protect their loved ones, go to simplysafe.com/dad, D-A-D, now. SimplySafe.com/dad, D-A-D. If you order today, you'll get an extra 10% off, plus a free keychain remote and free shipping. Go now to SimplySafe.com/dad.
Have you heard All of the Above with Norman Lear? So far, Norman's had conversations with Amy Poehler, Gerard Carmichael, Julia Louis-Dreyfus, and last week it was Kevin Bacon.
I have made a point of saying, you know, when I started to do I Love Dick, I have to wind them up a little bit.
That's great.
And don't forget to check out this week's episode with America Ferrara.
When I speak out and speak politically, I don't think of myself as speaking as an artist. I think of myself
as a person,
as a citizen, as a woman.
All of the Above with Norman Lear. New episodes every Monday on the Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts or PodcastOne.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
All right, we're back, and it's time to get into it with the guys from Styx. New record to talk about, tour going out this summer to talk about. We got a lot to cover, so let's do it. Tommy Shaw, James Young, Lawrence Gowan. This interview happened about a month ago on my volume show on Sirius XM. I think you're going to enjoy it, so let's take it away with Styx. JY and Tommy Shaw, good to see you guys.
Yes, Eddie, indeed.
Yeah? It's good to see you.
You too. And Lawrence Gowan,
nice to see you.
Is it Gowan or Gowan?
It's Gowan, and for Gowan. People in Canada, it's just Gowan, because there was no Lawrence way back when. Lawrence joined Styx.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
You just went by your last name?
Yeah, in the 80s, I was a one-name guy. If you remember, in the 80s, you weren't allowed to have two names, so I had a one-name career where I had, you know,
wow,
solo
you could
records.
Pull that off, huh?
I pulled it off several times, actually.
So your people records came out just on. Under that name?
Yes, just under Gowan.
So why did you guys decide you needed a first name?
It's a rule.
It didn't dawn on us how much he really was Gowan. We're from below the border, and he's a national treasure up there. They become classic songs.
Yeah, I have four songs that have reached what they call classic status, where they've been played on Canadian radio over 100,000 times. In America,
whoa,
it's a million, right? So Canada's one-tenth the population. So yeah, I have four songs: A Criminal Mind, Strange Animal, a song called Dancing in My Own Ground, and a song called what's the other one?
Midnight Desires.
Moonlight Desires was the first one that got there. Yeah. That's a song I did with and John Anderson from Yes did a beautiful guest vocalist part on that song.
So were you like, wait, no, I'm just Gowan. No, I'm.
Yeah.
And these guys, you need a first name. I love that for, like, you know, there's all these challenges coming into a band. You're
right.
Filling huge shoes coming in, replacing Dennis
DeYoung.
Sure.
And
you're like, but no, I'm just Gowan. And you're
right.
Like, no, I want, you're getting a damn first name in this band.
Well, he neglected to mention that. Then he tried to remake himself in the 90s and he put out a record called Call Me Larry.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did you really?
I did. Well, in the 90s, suddenly.
I'm wondering what's real and what's not.
I know.
Here.
No, it all sounds like one big comedy. But
it does.
Everything in life is a comedy in reverse, right? When you look back in your life, as life moved forward, it's a drama. And when you look back, it's a comedy. So in the 90s, to try to distance myself from my
so
mullet.
True.
Of the 80s, and the one name guy put out an album called Lawrence Gowan, but you can call me Larry.
So you should have come into the band and just called yourself Lawrence, and you guys could have just went with Sean Young. Could have been like a law firm, you know, Lawrence Sean Young.
It was a law firm, actually, for the first couple of years I was in the band, practically.
That's right.
And then it kind of went back to being a band.
Yeah. What year did you join, Lawrence?
1999.
99. So, you're the new guy coming up on almost 20 years in
the
band, right?
Yes.
So you know you're going to always wear that one.
I'll
probably.
Always wear that one. And proudly.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm the new guy from 1975.
Yeah, exactly, Tommy. I mean, you are. I mean, I did a show here on the radio because every day sometimes I have topics. I get into all this debate with my audience. And I had this thing, and I said, we did this back and forth with the audience. The best replacement members in the history of music. Like, who were the guys that came in that weren't original members that were the best fits and the best? And you think of Brian Johnson, you know, you think of all, and more than one person called in and said, Tommy Shaw, because even though you're not an original member, you know, you've got 40 years in and you're just so synonymous with the band. I didn't even think of you, actually, but that's a good thing, I think. But
sure.
But you are,
I'm
technically.
I'm honored, yeah, I'm technically a new guy.
Yeah. Yeah, do you feel that way about him, James? Is he, do you still haze him? Is he still the new guy?
No. He's my ally and my partner, and I desperately need him. So there's no hazing more.
No more hazing.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are here to talk about a new record, which, you know, another topic I had this week on this show is how long it's been, you know, what bands have taken the longest to put out new music that people want new music from. And for you guys, according to our calculations, it's been 14 years?
14 years.
Cyclorama?
Yep. Yeah. Cyclorama,
that's right.
That's
yep.
The last album's original material, yeah.
Man, Guns N' Roses had nothing on you, huh?
No.
Wow, that's amazing. And then this just kind of came out all of a sudden one day, poof, everybody said there's a new Styx record. Was that by design to keep it a little bit stealth?
Yes, because had we started talking about it before it was done, then it would just be the topic of conversation for months on end without a record to say now you can get it. We wanted it to be finished so that when we started talking about it, see, there's still a waiting period.
Yeah, big time.
Of 2 months, but you can purchase it now. You can do pre-orders, and there's things that come along with pre-ordering, little perks and things like that, just to keep it interesting while you're waiting for it to ship on June 16th. But yeah, we didn't want for there to be this interest in a new project that's still months before it's finished. So we did. We just kept it very quiet. And it was easy to do because all you had to do is look at our touring schedule and you go, there's no way they can make an album and still play 120 shows.
Right.
So
how did you do that? Did you guys do it on the road? Did you record anything on the road?
No, but it was just a lot of not taking breaks. It was just a lot of time when we weren't on the road working on the record. And it kind of stayed that way until we've completed it.
Yeah, the record is called The Mission, and we'll talk a little bit more about it. It comes out, you said, June 16th.
Right.
And you can pre-order it now where? Where would people go to do that?
Wherever you like.
Amazon or however they buy records.
Amazon, iTunes. You can get, we have some special bundles that are kind of cool on StixWorld.com, but you can also buy them through your, wherever you're used to buying your music.
Distributed all over North America by UME, and so
okay, so it'll be well out there.
Oh yeah,
yeah, yeah. Right. And you know, it's interesting. You talk about how you kind of kept this a little bit under wraps while you were making it. We're in a time, and I mean, all of you guys, Lawrence in Canada, you just mentioned all the success you had, and so you're a veteran of the music industry there. Even though when you joined Styx, you were a new guy to some degree here in America, but. Mm-hmm. Styx starting out on an independent label, right, way back in the day?
James. Well, I mean, it wasn't really independent. It was a custom label of RCA.
Right.
So, and Jerry Weintraub was a silent partner in it. So, I mean, it was, I wouldn't call it an independent label.
Okay.
I mean, we had RCA, we had major distribution with RCA, but in terms of promotion and stuff, I mean, it was sort of a subsidiary label, I think is what I would call it, to RCA. And that had its pros and cons, and we did get some attention, but Lady, which was released in 1973 when Styx 2 was first out there, you know, kind of caught fire in a couple of small markets, but nobody really worked it in any big way. And ultimately, a couple of years later, WLS Radio in Chicago, because we've always lived in Chicago, played around Chicago, and that song, there was a DJ there that promoted a lot of shows, and so he would buy his spots on WLS, and we go, Styx, and then you hear Lady. So that song, and you know, people got to know that song that listened to the top 40 stations in Chicago. And I think ultimately what happened was WLS, they would get requests for the song, but they never got, being a top 40 station, they virtually never got requests for songs that were not on their current playlist. So they said to us, when we brought our fourth record in to try and get them to play something off that, they said, well, no, we're not going to play this. This is a nice record, but the song Lady, we believe, is a hit that the record company overlooked, and we're going to play it once a night. When we go out 50,000 watts clear channel across the whole eastern seaboard from Chicago on down, and we're going to play it once a night until it becomes a hit. And the record company, when they heard that, they got behind it finally, and that's when Lady, you know, achieved a top 10 status and was basically number one in every market across the country. It just peaked in different, you know, different times, so it never got to number one nationally.
Right,
and
right.
We got a gold album out of the deal, and
and away you go, and then on to A&M and all that. But my point about bringing that up is that in the history of Styx, you guys have seen the industry, the ebbs and flows and the changes and the different ways that people do things, on that, going to A&M. Yeah. Then you would actually transition to some smaller labels later on in your career and release records. And now, you know, I talk to bands all the time, and everybody's got a different philosophy about making new music if you have a big history, as you guys do, you know, 40 years plus, more than. Some argue there's no point in doing it. It doesn't. We go out, people only want to hear the old stuff anyway. Nobody plays it. Nobody buys it. There's others that just say, hey, creatively, it's something we need to do, and we're doing it for us and the fans who do want it, and that's the end of it. You guys all know, and I'm sure nobody's dumb here, we all know that it, even for the Rolling Stones, it's brutal trying to get classic new music over to get the programmers to stop thinking and just like, oh, all there is Lady and Blue Collar Man and Renegade. So what's your think? What's your feeling about making new music and trying to get it over now in 2017 with a band that has a catalog like you guys have? What was the thought process? Was it something you just wanted to do because it was inside of you? Or do you hope that it really goes for you, that it really takes off?
Well, we had gotten really, just after we released Cyclorama 14 years ago, there was really no place for it at radio. But there was still kind of the classic way of doing things. You go to radio and try to get airplay, but there wasn't the airplay. And so we had spent all that time and resources on creating that new record. And so we just went back to doing what we knew worked for us, which was performing live on stage, which we really enjoyed doing. We all continued to write and do a little bit of recording and stuff and solo album stuff. I did a bluegrass album 4 or 5 years ago. And
you did the Shaw Blade stuff?
Did the Shaw Blade great stuff.
And, yeah. And we made some concert DVDs.
That's right. That's a very big point. James Young, he realized this is a way that we can get out there, is to do live concert DVDs. And James produced some really good ones.
And you played, didn't you guys play like all of Pieces of Eight and all of the Grand Illusion?
Yeah,
didn't you do
those
in their entirety?
Full concert.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Yeah. So all of that stuff was other sort of creative things to do while you were sort of, was this record simmering at all that? Like, when did the idea of to do a new record first come on the radar? Like, okay, this is now the next thing we want to do.
Well, you know, like I said, we're always writing stuff, and a little over 2 years ago, we were somewhere, and I came up with a little riff, and I took it home, and I fleshed it out musically, wrote a little middle section for it, and then when I went to write the words, what I wrote, I don't know if you listened to the album, but...
I haven't heard anything but the single.
Okay, so, well, when you hear the album... It's nice to listen to it from beginning to end. When you get to the end, you think it's the end, but then there's another song, and this is the song that got written first. And it came to me as so I'm writing these. Okay, you've got to write some lyrics, so I'm going to sing it. And there's a little chorus, and what I wrote was, "This is now I can say that this is the day we'll be on our way on our mission to Mars." And I thought, okay, that's what came out. And then I just wrote a bunch of little verses that kind of limerick style like that, because that's what the song called for. And I realized this is going to be a lot of fun to sing in three-part harmony.
Mm.
So I sang it. I sang the middle section. Then I put all the harmonies on it. And it was just like, it's kind of a fun thing for me. It's a song about a mission to Mars. I'm not going to play it for anybody.
Because, smoking a lot of weed at that time? Or?
No, not at the time.
I'm writing about Mission to Mars, man.
I think the song has had...
J.Y., Legends just wrote.
I think the song has had a bad influence on me, though. But so it was like that. And my friend Will Ivankovich, who helped me finish and mix and co-produce the Great Divide, the bluegrass album, he comes from more of a punk background, but he's also a huge Styx fan. He grew up playing Styx and prog music. And so I had played him this, and he said, "Let me play this other thing that I wrote." I wrote it in my sleep, and I got up, and I was able to remember it. And he had this song called Locomotive. And I listened to it, and I thought, that kind of goes with this Mission to Mars song. And then I wrote some more words to it and wrote another section to it. And I was like, it's kind of like two little end pieces here. And so we played around with it and wrote the beginning of another song and a little song here and another song that never made it to the album, but it went with everything. So the next thing you know, it started having some meaning to it, and it was about a mission to Mars. It was about this crew that, you know, it's the day that you're going to Mars and what everybody's going through. That's what it made it easy to write about, because it was the experience, the life experience of these people leaving Earth behind and maybe never returning, and what they left behind. What are they going through? What are they going through when they're out there? So that made it easier to write about. And there was some technical stuff. I read that book, The Martian. It had just come out.
The one the movie was made? The same
movie was made.
The Matt Damon.
I thought, wow, this is a lot of scientific stuff going on here. I don't know how much that needs to be in the film, but it's really good. And then during that time, Lawrence could take that part up, the the New Horizons people called.
Yes, yeah. During, just coincidentally, NASA, they had this spacecraft called the New Horizons, and it took off from Earth 9 years prior to, I think it was July the 5th, 2 years ago.
This actually happened.
This is true. Yeah, I'm not. This is not the weed story. This right. is the real story. So,
weed comes later.
Well, yeah. So, they invited us to come to NASA because we were playing in Washington, right by where their secret headquarters is, and they asked us to come there to witness the arrival of it, mainly because they had discovered a fifth moon around Pluto that they never knew existed, and they decided to name that moon Styx. So they wanted Styx the band to be there on the big day when
wow.
New Horizons
did
arrived
they
at
name
Pluto.
It after the band?
Well, they said they named it. It
from
you know,
Greek
they
mythology,
said
everything is kind of named from Greek mythology.
It begins there, but the guy who
the word was
the guy who named it, Mark
Scholl,
said, "Yeah, this is really because I'm a huge fan of the band." You know, so and they had a big banner when we came in saying "Welcome, Styx, to wow. NASA's New Horizons." So that eventually kind of skewed the story a little bit. You know, it was a mission to Mars at first, but then we figured, well, if this is happening and we got our own moon, we decided, well, after they leave Mars, they go on to Pluto and they stop by the moon Styx, you know. So that's all woven into it. You can ignore that story and just listen to the songs, and the album still stands on its own. But
after I'm cremated, that's where I want them to put my ashes. Right?
Yeah, right on Styx. Yeah. Right, that's the place. That's where you want to go eventually. But you know what, something, Eddie? Back to your question about making new music. There's so much in what you said about how what I've witnessed being in the band for nearly a couple of decades.
The reason
now.
Why I bring it up is because everybody I talk to, I have a band in here almost every day or yeah. every other day, and every band, if they're bands with long histories, they yeah. all have a different view on it. They're all like, no, we don't care. We're making a record a year. We love it. And then they'll have guys and be like, you know what? We see our crowd just empty out, and we say, we're going to do a couple from our new record, and we just don't want to do it. It's not worth it.
Right.
So everyone, and I get all sides of it.
Yeah,
it's just curious. It's just interesting to get everybody's perspectives
on
it.
Every band has a unique story and a unique reason why they derive at whatever answer they have to that question. With us, I've witnessed us as an entity. You know, the personality of the band, not any individual, but the personality of the band as it's developed over us playing so many shows together in front of so many thousands of people, that there's something there, that there's a magic there. And I thought, this is really going to be a shame if we never make another studio record, where I'd be hearing all these great ideas backstage and going, come on. And then J.Y. started playing that opening riff to Gone, 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 which is the song that's out right now.
Right, there's a video for it, you can see.
Okay. Yep. So I'm hearing that. Then about a day later, I hear Tommy playing along with him. And Tommy had played me that Mission to Mars song. Right. And I'd heard a snippet of what Will had with Locomotive. I heard just a little tiny bit. And I thought, come on. You know, this is it. And finally I said, well, are we going to do this? Because I love anything about space and concepts. I love those things. So are we going to do this? And Tommy said, well, if we're going to do it, we better damn well like it. So that became the goal. That became the target. You know, instead of let's make a new record because we have to.
Making it for you.
Really, that really became the thing.
Yeah.
So that's why I'm so proud of it.
And it just started to explode. And then, little, you know, when Lawrence was okay with it, it was like, well, okay, everybody can hear it now. And it's more serious. It's not a silly thing. And then little by little, everybody started putting their selves into it. The bass went from me playing, you know, playing a demo bass or Will playing bass to Ricky Phillips playing bass, and that opened up the whole Ricky yeah. Phillips bass world. And then Will is a great drum program. He programmed the demo stuff, but then Todd took it in, and it became, you know, Todd is a compositional type drummer, and he composed these drum parts for himself. They're unbelievable. We sat there and watched him play, because he recorded his drums on two inch Studer analog tape machines.
Oh, went old school.
Yeah,
and
everything.
And on a Neve
console.
Did you
record the record on
yes.
tape?
Yes, yep. Everything
yes.
was
analog?
Done.
Yes,
everything.
Really?
Everything
was done
as if it was 1979.
Wow.
Basically.
Okay. So I'm assuming there's going to be a vinyl as one of those packages.
It was done to be on vinyl. It was made to be on vinyl, yeah. And Jim Scott mixed it.
Yep.
Richard Dodd mastered it. It's guys who are all used to doing great analog stuff. And we used a classic Neve console of Blackbird, not a single digital plug-in, any delays taped, you know, or actual tape machines. So we had the two, you know, we had a half track and a half inch and a
So you went and made a record old school the way they used to make records.
Yeah.
Because there's...
Where we used to make records.
And a lot of bands back in the day. But, I mean, there's a lot of artists, a lot of fans that would be surprised to know that a lot of records today are made. Sometimes the artists aren't even in the same state.
Right.
They're not in the same country.
We've done that.
Files around.
We did that with a song, Everything All the Time, or was it Just Be?
What was the song? I'll think of it in a minute.
We did it where we everyone
difference in the world.
Difference in the world. Everyone was in their own studio, you know. So I, you know, sent my parts in, my keyboard parts in, and Tom, you know, put his parts in. We all did that without us all being in the same room, and the result was a very nice recording of that song, Difference in the World. But it wasn't, the magic wasn't there of having all of us in the room together. Smelling a tape machine, you know, a two-inch tape machine going around. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
There's a whole ambience that goes with it.
Of course,
It's like a band rehearsing in a rehearsal hall as compared to when they're on stage with the lasers going like crazy. There's a different energy that's taking place, you know, and a different intent.
I think that song was the turning point because it was a decent song.
Yeah.
But it was so sterile because we were just in our little rooms by ourselves. We weren't looking for... you know, reactions from each other and advice from each other as a band, because we're a band.
Yeah.
So I think that helped us all feel better about, you know, let's unite around this purpose of let's make a great sounding record that sounds like Styx, that sounds like guys in a band all working on it together, which is what it was.
Yeah.
And you really allowed
the creative friction to come into the room of the band, where when we're getting ready for a show, there's all kinds of ideas that are being thrown around the dressing room, and why don't we do this, why don't we do that, and some of them are shot down, or some are like, you know, another guy grabs onto it, and then that escalates, etc. That's how the songs were written.
Yeah, there
and
was
that's
some
how
great
the songs
tension
were
that went on in the studio. It was fantastic, and it pushed people.
Yeah.
It irritated some people, and And out of that,
James is laughing about the irritated. Would you be the irritated one, James? Get up on that mic so we can hear your answer, because you're way far off of it right now.
Well,
did you have to be sold on this?
I was excited about the fact that we were doing this project.
But a concept record, which you guys have history doing, of course, Paradise Theater, Mr. Roboto, you've been in that world before. But everyone knows a concept record can either be The Wall. Or it can be The Elder from Kiss, you know. It can be the produced by the same guy, by the way, Bob Ezrin, who I just spent time with in Canada.
Yeah.
But I mean, you know, so it can be the. I mean, you said yourself, Tom, you could be a little bit concerned. You know, you wanted to make sure it wasn't goofy or it was perceived right. So it's a risky thing. Not only are you making your first record in 14 years, but it's this concept record about Mars.
We had this interaction in the studio when we were doing the keyboard parts and the vocal. It wasn't just one person say, this is how it's going to be.
Right.
Yeah.
There was differences of ideas, and it was kind of awesome. You know, after being these little separate islands throwing in things like that.
Yeah, right. I mean, that's what being a band is. Hey, yeah. I'm getting the sign. I guess, JY, you have to go. You're doing something on the Golf Channel or something?
Well, they line us up for everything we could possibly do, and I don't play golf, but I play it very poorly.
Well, I thought you were a big golf guy. That's why you were going.
I'm really a fan of these young gun golfers and what's the changes going on. We have a lot of PGA golfers that are big Styx fans. So there's a tie-in, and we're just trying to get the word and the record out.
All right, so you have to go sell.
I didn't know I was going to be leaving you to do it.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. But you got to go sell some Styx records to the golfers out there. So they're telling me you got to go. So we're going to take a break. We're going to say goodbye to you, unfortunately.
All right.
But Tommy, and I'm just going to call you Gowan from now on.
No, I like it. Okay.
Yes.
It feels so wrong, though. It's
do
like
it,
a,
man. Do
well,
it.
Shaw and Gowan are staying, and Young is leaving.
But, Gowan!
But Tommy and Lawrence are going to stay with us for the remainder of the hour, and JY has got to run and do some golf talk. So great to see you, man. And if I don't see you before you leave, good luck with the record. And come back anytime, of course. Perfect. You're always welcome.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
TrueCar. I've been telling you about them, and there's something about TrueCar a lot of people don't know. What is it? Using the TrueCar app can also help you buy a used car. That's what you might not know. In fact, there are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. So whether you're looking to buy new or used, you can get upfront pricing information that empowers discounts off the list price for used cars and a better buying experience through our TrueCar certified dealer network. And who does not want that? There are over 700,000 pre-owned vehicles available from TrueCar certified dealers nationwide. You'll see what other people paid for the car you want, so you can know what a fair price is and feel confident. With TrueCar, you can connect with a local certified dealer of your choosing so you can enjoy a quick, easy buying experience. Using TrueCar, you can easily find the new or used car that you want. So, when you're ready to buy a new or used car, visit TrueCar to enjoy a more confident car buying experience. Some features are not available in all states.
Hey, it's John Horn here. I'm the host of the new podcast that you need to subscribe to right now. It's called Geffen Playhouse Unscripted, and every week I chat about the creative process with stars who have roots and ties to theater. Who so far, would you ask? Well, let me tell you, we have Rainn Wilson, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Dana Delany, Bryan Cranston, David Copperfield, Matt Walsh, and so many more yet to come. It's called Geffen Playhouse Unscripted with me, John Horn. You can download it on the Podcast One app, or you can subscribe now on iTunes or at podcastone.com.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
So Lawrence and Tommy continue with us here talking about Styx, talking about their new album, The Mission, which comes out on June 16th. We'll talk about some other stuff as well. And just going back to the record for a second, when you make a concept record, I mean, you guys have been really active touring. You've been out with a bunch of different packages. You're going out with REO and Don Felder, right?
Yeah, right.
That's
right.
The latest run. When does that start?
That starts in June, I think June 20th, actually.
Because
is the right date. Is that right? 4 days after the album's released.
Okay, because when James left, he said you have a show tomorrow somewhere.
We do, yeah.
So you're still
show.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You're doing your own sort of one-off deals and then getting ready for the tour.
Yeah, there's no time off in Styx world.
No, there's no rust.
No.
Well, here's when you come out and you promote and you make a concept record, which this record will be when it comes out. Yeah. It begs the logical question, would there be an event or a way that you would like to present the whole record as one piece live at one point? Because you've done that before with Paradise Theater, right?
And yes. And
well, we didn't play the whole Paradise Theater.
No. It was Grand Illusion and Pieces of Eight.
Yes.
Those two albums together. Yeah.
Did you ever play Paradise Theater start to finish, though?
No, we never did.
Mr. Roboto?
Nope.
Really?
Nope.
Okay. Well, Wait, I just had the idea for the Styx like mega fan experience.
Here it comes, folks.
One night, all three concept records performed in their entirety. Tommy's like, I can't now. You're going to kill me?
I'm totally
a little
brave. I would never. That's actually not a bad idea.
I like
because
it.
What it's still you could still probably do it in under 2 hours.
No, because this album's only 42 minutes and 8 seconds.
So there you go. I mean, the first single is 2 minutes
long.
2 minutes
long, yeah.
That means we're gonna have to rehearse, though.
I hear that from so many bands too. When fans call in, like, "How come you never do this song?" And well, we'd have to rehearse then. You know, you get to this point, you're this well-oiled machine, and it's just you just go in and knock it out. But I mean, I would imagine that would be a cool thing to be able to do if you had the opportunity
to do
it start to finish.
You're absolutely right. Doing it on a summer blockbuster tour with two other bands in the bill would be wrong. So we'll probably only do one or two new songs. But
an event sort of thing for Styx fans, an event destination sort of gig.
Yeah.
It'd be pretty cool.
If the album is received to the degree that we hope it is, then that is something that could definitely be considered, and I'd love to see it happen.
Talk about some of the touring that you've done recently, because you're out with Def Leppard. That's the last time I saw you. Yeah. That was a great bill, getting ready with REO. As a matter of fact, the tour with Leppard was you guys, and was it Tesla in the opening spot?
Yeah.
And Tesla.
Yeah.
And then, I mean, they've been out, Def Leppard's been out for like the last 10 years constantly, it seems like. Yeah. And Tesla's always in that they're always in that on deck circle spot. They're good friends.
They're good friends and the music goes really well together.
Yeah, and now they got Poison in that middle slot, and then you got I think REO did some stuff with Leopard at one point.
Did, right?
Yep. And now you guys are getting together with REO, and I'm sure there's a lot of history there, right?
Between you guys. We're old friends, and the dressing room doors are open. Everybody's in each, you know, we're like one big family. And same with Felder and his band.
Mm-hmm.
We actually did a short installation in Las Vegas, 5 shows over a 2-week period, where Felder joined our band, and we became his Eagles. And we played.
Wow.
Yeah. Yes. We played. You know, about a third
songs,
of our
6 or 7 songs, Eagle songs.
So he came in the middle of our set, and we played his songs. He left, and he came back and played some, helped us play the way out. And so it was really nice to get inside those Eagle songs because they're simple, but they're elegant. So you got to do them. You have to do them justice because everybody knows them. And so that was a lot of fun. I had my banjo debut on Take It Easy.
Take It Easy, yeah.
Wow.
So the banjo's still in the rack. You know, I haven't taken it home.
Maybe you do it up again if he's going to be out with you again, right?
I don't know if he's hinting at that at all, but he always has a look in his eye, Tommy does, whenever the... He puts it forth that the banjo is available if you'd like to hear it. And by the way, he kills it. He plays it fantastic. That was actually, you know, I said to Don, you know, I love playing these Eagles songs, but seeing a banjo on stage with Styx and Don Felder of the Eagles, that was the pinnacle moment in the show for me.
And there are no sad banjo songs.
Right, right.
That's one thing I learned as a part-time banjo player.
If there's a smile on your face.
It is like the fiddle, though. It's a very kind of noisy, rough learning curve for anybody who's within earshot of it. So
it makes a lot of sense to me, though, that would work, because one of the real trademarks of Styx and the Eagles' music is the incredible vocals and the harmonies.
Mm-hmm.
And here's something. And when I saw you guys, I don't know, a year or two ago with Def Leppard, Tommy, you said something from the stage the night I was at that show, which I applaud you beyond belief for doing, because it's a huge peeve of mine as a live music fan. And that is you just talked about recording the record old school and tape and all that, because of the advances in technology, more and more bands you go to see, how much of what you're seeing is actually really live versus pre-recorded tracks and all that.
Right.
And you stepped to the mic at the show I saw in New Jersey, and you said, I just want everybody to know, everything coming off of this stage tonight is real, live, and in the original key.
Yes.
And I was like, fuck yeah, man.
And I usually add, every mistake you're hearing is being performed live for you tonight.
Yes.
But my why I was so glad that you did that is because, and it's something I talk about a lot with my audience, I get calls from a lot of fans, and they'll be like, I just saw fill in the blank. They sounded amazing. Oh, my God, the vocals are unbelievable. And I know they're running tracks. I know it's not real.
Yeah.
And to me, the bands that are putting in the work to actually do it live and do it real, when you've got singers like Lawrence and Tommy and everybody in your band, you should you're not slamming the other bands that are doing it, but you damn
That's
well...
That's just how we choose to do
you
it.
You damn well should get the acknowledgement and the appreciation, in my view, for putting that work in.
Well, thank
so
you
I applaud
that.
You for, A, doing it and calling attention to it, because I think it's important. You're putting in that work.
And I should say that more often, because I have heard people say that, you know, you guys are running tracks on your vocals, right?
That's a compliment, because they sound so good they think you are.
When
we did Seven Bridges Road with Don, I couldn't wait for people to see it, because there's a couple of YouTube videos of it, and I couldn't wait for people to hear it, because we really carved those harmonies for weeks, or actually for months, getting ready for that. And sure enough, it came off great. But people thought, are they running tracks? And I can tell you, absolutely 100% zero. You know, every mistake you heard, you were hearing live, as a wise philosopher once said. And so, you know, the other thing is this. There have been shows where one of us has lost our voice entirely. Now, if ever there was an incident where you might think, okay, if we ran some tracks, we'd get away with it, this band has never done that. Tommy, a couple of times, has completely had no voice. We all kind of jump in and try to cover the what we can. Same thing's happened to me on several occasions. My voice is gone. I got to kind of half apologize to the audience, but it's amazing how forgiving the audience is when they know that they're hearing, this is real.
Yeah.
And the energy's real. And everything about it is authentic. So those wind up being sometimes some of the best shows because they've had to fill in the gaps
for us.
But
for me, as a music fan, I don't, if I'm going to see a band live, I want it to be live, warts and all. That's
sure.
what the live experience
Absolutely.
Is. I don't want to go see karaoke. And more and more what I'm seeing is that. Karaoke, and it bums me out. So the bands that I know that are truly doing it completely live, to me, should get the accolades. They should get the acknowledgement, whether someone else is giving it to them, or like Tommy did, say it from the stage. And here's the other thing, too. I understand that every band out there, maybe some of the singers can't do it, or they've put stuff on their records that is too much for the lineup to handle live.
Yeah.
I get that. So to me, the best way to handle that is put a human being up there with you. I mean, Aerosmith has done it the right way forever, in my opinion.
Yeah.
They've got a guy. They acknowledge him. He sits behind right up by the amps. Steven introduces him at the end. Here's Buck helping us out, or whoever they have with us.
Yeah.
He's helping us out on keyboard.
And
he's there.
There's no shame.
There's no shame. It's like, okay,
zero.
Great. We get it.
It's
that,
great.
You know, crying is pretty up there, and you need somebody to cover with you. It's fine. It's
exactly.
It's real.
Yeah.
But when you're sitting there and you're just hearing this track that you know is just came from the record, and it's
you
like,
know what
oh.
it is, Eddie, what you're picking up on is that it's a completely different energy from a live performance to a recorded performance.
Yeah.
And even though the recorded performance might sound great coming through the speakers, it doesn't have the intensity of a live thing where the guy's having to like stretch or go through the pain of getting to that note, or just simply have another person
up
there
that
helps you with it.
And if it's a touch off, it's okay. That's what live is.
Yeah.
That's the energy. That's the
it
experience.
Is.
That
exactly
makes
that.
It real.
And,
yep.
and it's difficult from night to night, building to building.
Yeah.
It's unbelievably...
It's never the same twice.
Yeah. That's why it's good to have sound checks, is to hear what the room sounds like. And some rooms are just are wonderful, and some are kind of weird. And so you will have the conversation with your monitor guy, and let's see if we can give me something to work with it. And so that's the challenge. And with the thing with Felder, we had to set aside some rehearsal time and to work those harmonies up. And then there's a lot of different things that we would, you know, which part are you singing?
So we switched them around, you know, hundreds of times,
yeah,
it seems
so
like. Yeah.
It was always a work in progress.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was always worth it because, like you said, it really sounds real.
Yeah.
Even if it's not perfect, boy, it sure sounds. You got a bunch of professional guys up there doing it, so it's not going to sound, never going to sound terrible.
It's not about perfection anyway, particularly in a live show. It's not about that's not what where the entertainment is. The entertainment is in revving the audience up to where there's an exchange of energy from them to the band and from the band back to them, and the cycle of that is where that's where all the entertainment is. When you take that give and take away from it by simply having a recording there, say, oh well, I'll just speak for us. It would defeat the whole endeavor.
Yeah, well, keep taking credit for it, man, because it's twofold. You deserve it, and it's good that it creates awareness because there's so many people that don't realize that some of these bands, it's basically karaoke at some point. I mean, there's some bands I know that are running guitar and bass tracks on, you know, behind them. I mean,
once you start, it's
kind of,
it's a...
I mean, I could be up there doing sticks if it's going to be on tracks, you know? I'll go up and sing... sing the Grand Illusion, no problem. I can sing just like Tommy Shaw if it's a track and I'm just lip syncing to it, right?
Then we might do that.
Nobody needs to see that, Lawrence.
Okay.
Trust me, nobody needs to see that. So we're coming up on this other break. I got a whole bank of phone calls here. Can you guys stay a little longer, or do you have to run out of here now? Do we know?
JY is doing his PGA golf.
Can they stay
interview.
A little bit longer?
I can stay.
They can
stay
here?
Yeah. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Management's out the door.
Know,
that's now we get really crazy.
I know JY would like to come back.
I know he would.
just for his own sake, he's not a golfer.
Yeah.
But he's a great sports enthusiast, and Ricky Phillips is actually
he's the real golfer. Ricky was friends with Arnold Palmer, believe it or not.
Ricky played with Arnold Palmer. Yeah. Ricky's a really great golfer.
Well, unfortunately, Ricky's not here. JY is, and JY's taking the golf bullet right now.
See, you know something? So Ricky, I think with our manager here, go and get JY and bring him back to Eddie's show.
But Ricky and JY will watch the Golf Channel on a regular basis. So you go on the bus, and it's on the Golf Channel.
All right, so at least he can talk. He can carry the conversation over there. So okay. All right, so let's go to a break, and then fortunately we have a little more time here with the guys. We'll come back. Our lines are jammed. Everybody wants to talk to you, so we will allow the audience to talk to the members of Styx when we come back and let you guys fire away.
The Eddie Trunk Podcast.
Hey, you guys, have you heard that Alone is back with a crazy new twist? And being together never felt so alone. Yep, Alone is back for a fourth season. And this time, some of the rules have changed. You know the deal, 10 hardcore survivalists. They'll still be dropped off into the unforgiving wilderness, but that is where the similarities with previous seasons end. You see, these 10 participants in Alone are comprised of 5 competing teams, brothers, fathers, and sons, and a married couple who all have unbreakable bonds. The competitors will be split apart and dropped off as individuals, equipped with their 10 items, 5 each. And in order to win the game, they must mobilize, find each other, and survive on the island together longer than the other competing pairs. And they'll face extreme isolation, psychological distress, both individually and together as they plunge into the unknown, self-documenting their experiences along the way. Yep, that's the deal. There's no cameras. These guys really are alone. They're shooting themselves. This is as like real and raw as it gets, folks. Can they work together? Or will the strength of their bond crumble beneath the anvil of Mother Nature? At stake, $500,000 awarded to the team that can last the longest. And this season brings the viewers back to North Vancouver Island, where the threat of predators is fiercer than last season, and the weather is the hardest they've seen yet. It really is an incredible journey into the human spirit. You've got to check it out. Alone on History. It really, I mean, this is unlike any other survivalist show, folks. This is as real as it gets. You got to check it out, Alone. And the new season, it's premiering Thursday, June 15th, 10, 9 Central on History.
Hey everyone, it's Caitlin Bristow. Starting May 30th, you can listen to my show Off the Vine with Caitlin Bristow every Tuesday on Podcast One. Hear me take on taboo topics and unfiltered advice. I'll also be dishing with some amazing celebrities. Oh, and did I mention there'll be wine? So grab a glass and join me every Tuesday on PodcastOne.com, the new Podcast One app, or subscribe on Apple Podcasts.
This is the Eddie Trunk Podcast.
I break down.
Perfect timing that we got you back, because we're lucky to have some more time here in the second hour with the guys in Styx, and we're going to get to all these calls waiting patiently to talk to you guys. You'll need your headphones on before so you can hear the callers. The volume knobs are right there. One last thing for me before I go to the phones, and it's, I have to say this because I rant and rave about this and have for 20 years and or plus, and some of my ranting and raving has actually resulted in some change and some positive things and some people actually getting in. I'm going to begin my ranting and raving about Styx for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I'm wondering, I know I care about it as a fan of the band. I know your fans care about it. I know it's out of your control. You guys have nothing to do with it. So, but I'm curious if you, I'm sure you hear about it from your fans all the time, and I'm curious for you guys if it bothers you at all. I mean, or are you indifferent to it? We're seeing change finally. We're seeing Journey finally going in. Cheap Trick finally going in. We're seeing some bands finally who were ignored 20, 25 years. Kiss, Rush, yes, finally going in. So I gotta think, very soon, you guys are going to pop up on that ballot. How do you feel about it? Is it something that weighs on you, or you really aren't, whatever?
Well, I think we've probably had the whole spectrum of emotions on it, from not caring to caring, maybe not caring. For the longest time, I felt like, yes, I want to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame posthumously. I want to be in there after I'm gone.
You're trying to, you want to outweight them, or they're going to outweight you? Or
well,
what?
That way, it puts me in the driver's seat. You know? Yeah, go ahead and
you
get
don't
the,
have to decide now. Whether you show up or not.
Right. I don't want to go.
He's already in the Alabama Music Hall of Fame.
And that was very sweet.
Tommy wants to be, they just put the big picture up while you other guys are talking, right?
And everybody can, oh, it's too bad he's not here.
I'll be up there God going, forbid, no, Tommy, no. God forbid.
But listen, we have a moon named after us.
True.
Sticks. Somebody over there likes us. we've sold a lot of records. We love our fans. I think they like us. I became a member of the Alabama Music Hall of Fame while my mother was still living. She got to go to that show. You know, that was one of the coolest things of my life. So this other thing, it's kind of convoluted on how you get there.
Oh, yeah.
But it does, your fans do like the idea of you being there.
The acknowledgement, sure.
Yeah, the acknowledgement of it. So I've gone from that you know, having a very sour attitude about the whole process of getting in there, to not really caring, to go, okay, give it to me when I'm dead, to now I'm okay. And when I see our friends getting in there, I realize, especially like this year's class was, I loved it. I loved who, yep. who all got in. And now I've kind of come full circle, like, or whatever part of the circle is. I think Sticks should be in, and I will show up for it. I don't know how many tickets I want to throw down for, but
yeah, because that's another whole thing. I mean, there's the ticket thing, and then there's also, which comes into play with you guys, because you got Lawrence sitting here who's logged 18 years, and you've got other members who have been in and out of the band, a long history, and that's the whole other drama when you do get inducted, because they decide which members go in and who doesn't. You know, Pearl Jam just went in, and the drummer on two of their biggest records was not included. But the guy who played on the other, it's really, that's a whole nother thing, and that causes more drama. Tommy's like, posthumously is the way to go.
Yeah, that's totally the way to go.
I mean,
totally.
I hope you don't have to
you
pay
can't
for a
lose.
Ticket for me.
There's no drama.
It's a lot of money, too.
I know. Yes. That would show some commitment.
Yeah, you get mentions, and you didn't have to go. So maybe I'll hold on to that. But if it happens while I'm still living, I will go there, and I will step up on that stage and accept it and try and be as gracious as I can. And whether we play or not, you're still in, right? Whether you play or not?
Yeah. Yeah, so. Kiss didn't play. That was the one year that I went. I went with Ace and Peter. I sat at their table, and they didn't play because that's where all the drama comes in, because they only inducted the original four members of the band. And Gene and Paul refused to play with those guys, and the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame only wanted it with those guys because the other guys weren't being inducted. So it was a whole standoff, so nobody played. So it's, you know, everybody, that's the other thing. Everybody goes in at different levels of drama. It's very it's very rare that everybody has the kumbaya moment. You know who did it right? Cheap Trick. Because
I was very impressed by
they
them.
Had a, you know, obviously there's a big division with Bunny Carlos. Bunny had sued him and everything, but you know what? Rick and Robinson, you know, Tom, we're going to go up there. We're going to accept with Bunny. He was the guy on the records, and we're going to play, and we'll play with them the three songs that we're going to play, and then we're done, and everybody goes their ways.
Yep.
Hart did that too, although there was some weirdness with Hart, but they at least did get up there and do a couple songs with those guys. So,
well, I guess we would just have to face that situation when it happens.
Yeah,
and do the right thing. That's best for all concerned.
Yeah.
You can't go wrong doing that.
Yeah, exactly. It's for one night. It is what it is. Absolutely. I mean, the big thing this year was Steve Perry and Journey.
Right.
And right up till the 11th hour, nobody knew what was going to happen. And I had Neil on this show a bunch of times leading up to it, a couple at least. And I felt bad for Neil because the fans were pounding him about Steve. And he's like, you don't get it. This isn't like me saying I want Steve as much as anybody. Arnell wants Steve more than anybody because he wants to meet him. He goes, you know, Arnell was on Twitter saying, please show up, Steve Perry. It wasn't like there was a weirdness, but they just didn't know what was going to happen. And right up until the day of, there was still discussions, is Steve going to come out and sing? A couple days out, they found out he was actually going to physically be there. and be part and stand up there with them. But then it was the whole X factor. Does he sing? And he didn't sing. And Arnell sang. But there's this photo of Arnell meeting Steve Perry, and he's like literally, it's like those photos you see when somebody meets the Pope, like on one knee and looking up and holding his hand. It was very touching. It was really very nice. Because
that's very nice.
Arnell is a very sweet
guy.
He's so humble and so talented.
He is absolutely. James, anything you want to add on the Hall of Fame as a original Styx guy here?
I mean, my sense of the whole thing is that. From what I can tell from everyone else's experience, not that I've really talked. Well, I mean, the Cheap Trick guys we've seen since they got inducted. But, I mean, the crazy thing is my younger brother who passed away when he was 50 years old, back about 15 years ago, was actually in a band briefly with Robin Zander. And whenever I see Robin, he says, "JY, your brother kicked me out of the band." Your brother fired me. So, you know, but those guys, you know, it hasn't changed their lives. It's not going to change my life.
No, that's the big misconception. And just being honest, and I'm honest to a fault sometime. Yeah. The bottom line is this. If you go in or you don't go in, it does not change your draw. And it doesn't change anything. People are lying to you if it does that. It's a nice thing to be able to say. It's a nice acknowledgement. It's great if you're a fan of the band to say it. But it doesn't change your life at all the day after it's over.
Right.
Boom! If you were a 5,000 seat draw as a headliner, you're still 5,000. If you're 10, you're still 10. If you're 500, you're still 500. Right. Nothing changes.
So, I mean, I was somewhat resistant to the notion, but now I'm neutral in the way that Tommy is. I suppose that, you know, if it comes, it comes. Have we sold enough records? Have we, you know, sold enough concert tickets? Have we had enough success on a variety of levels on three different continents? Of course we have, much more so than many that are in there. So are we deserving? Yes. Will that panel of 50 people see it that way? I don't know. And I don't care.
Well, I can tell you this. I don't get to – I'm a voter. After screaming and hammering it for 20, 25 years, they made me a voter. I don't get to pick who goes on the ballot. That's the room you told of the 50 people. Yeah. But I am one of the guys the ballot comes to check off who gets to go in. So I am there's a couple artists, like as they finally make progress and you finally saw Rush and Kiss and Alice Cooper and Cheap Trick and Journey and these guys go in – then my list of snubs continues to, you know, who I hammer on, you know, starts up. And you guys get ready because there's a lot of hammering coming from me for you guys to go. Mm-hmm. You guys, Foreigner, Pat Benatar, to me, is mind-boggling. Pat Benatar is not there. I mean, she's a pioneer of female-fronted rock. Uh-huh. And look at how much female-fronted rock we have now. I mean, yeah. Pat Benatar, Neil Giraldo was here not a little while ago, but how has Pat not even been in the conversation?
Right,
so,
right.
Yeah, there's still work to be done, but there has been some progress, and that's a good thing.
Yeah, and Yes is in, which is fantastic. It's too bad that Chris wasn't around for it. But
because those pieces – see, now you're going to get me started, yeah. Tommy. Because if they didn't snub Yes yeah. for 30 years
exactly.
and only snubbed him for 28, Chris
there.
Squire would have been there.
Yeah. Yeah.
The same thing with Deep Purple. They
right.
snubbed that band for 30 years. John Lord's the founding member, Deep Purple.
Right.
They
yeah.
waited so long that John wasn't there.
Right.
So, Tommy, we can't have you posthumously. We got to make sure you're there, Tommy.
Well, you know, we've had with our former keyboard player with Dennis, we've gone through a lot to get to where we are right now, where there's peace in the land,
yeah.
and we still have, it's like we're a divorced couple who have children together, so the kids are still, they're always in the mix, and it's taken a long time. We still have the same publisher, and it finally got peaceful everywhere, and I don't want it to ever get
I don't want it to get
unpeaceful anymore, because it's just too, life's too short.
Yeah, well, that's right, because obviously that's the elephant in the room, that obviously if you were to go in, then there's you've got to make that decision how you're going to handle things with Dennis.
Yeah, and, you know, we're all grown-ups, but I just don't want to go through any more of that's what we've already been through.
Right. All right, well, we're putting the cart before the horse because we need the Hall of Fame to come to the party before we can even talk about
it. But you know,
this,
that's the elephant in the room.
Yeah.
So there's a little more unveiling of the elephant.
Yeah. All right. All right. So let's get some calls on right now, and we'll talk to J.Y., Tommy, and Lawrence Gowan from Styx. The new album, June 16th, is coming out. It's called The Mission. We talked quite a bit about it earlier in the show, and we'll grab some calls now because people have been waiting for like an hour at times here. Let's talk to Brett, who is in New York. Hey, Brett, you're first up.
Hey, thanks, Ed. Thanks. Just to piggyback off what you were saying, because you usually talk about bands with former members. I mean, why not talk about the elephant, you know? You guys did reunite 20 years ago, right? And he would be there at the Hall of Fame, and you guys aren't getting any younger.
So you say your question, Brett, is if they would ever do anything with Dennis again. I think Tommy's point
is... Yeah, I mean, if Van Halen can reunite with David Lee Roth, Guns N' Roses, the Eagles said Hell Freeze is over, right? Not in this lifetime.
Guns N' Roses said not in this lifetime, yeah. I don't know.
Right? Everybody says the same thing, but nobody asks that question, or it's just like, Jesus, that bad? I mean, most of us have been divorced. We know how bad that gets. But...
Well, anybody want to take that?
I'll take it. I mean, as far as working together, it is that bad. We're happy to stand on stage with Dennis. I've forgiven him for all he did to us. And I truly wish Dennis well. I truly wish him happiness and success on his own. He didn't want to be a member of this band. On our terms, anyway, or on the terms of the democracy. And that's fine. We did some great work together. And as Tommy said, it's like we have those children, the Grand Illusion, Pieces of Eight.
Well, the thing is we did get back together. We gave it a good old try. We thought that maybe time would change things, and as it turned out, it is like the divorced couple that everybody, you guys should get back together. And yeah, we're older. Let's get and they get
That's
back
right.
together. And then it's
because '96, it was like, okay, we're going to try this again.
And we did. We really gave it a try, but it literally started making people sick. It made people sick.
Made me sick.
And. So you just have to go. How many times do you do the same thing over and expect a different result? And I don't mean that out of any disrespect. It's just that life is too short, and we have a great thing going for the last 18 years.
Well, I hear that a lot from bands too. Is that there's a point where you have to look at whenever anybody's looking at any reunion of any kind with any former member, you have to weigh the return versus the potential risk, right? Yeah. And the return has to be massively substantial for a lot of people to possibly go down that road. If you look at the business you guys are doing and how great the shows have been received, and now you're making new music and you're out there doing these amphitheater tours every summer and doing great business.
And we made this, we have this new album, which was the culmination of all these years together is this lineup.
The point is that like a perfect, you talk about Guns N' Roses as the caller brought up. Guns N' Roses were doing good business without Slash. Slash comes back, that elevates them from good, respectable arena crowd to stadium, multiple stadium crowds around the world. And Slash is sober and a good dude, he's a friend, so there's not even the underlying drama. It's just they figured, okay, speaking honestly, I don't mean this with any disrespect to Dennis, but if Dennis came back to the band tomorrow, I think you guys are still doing pretty much the same business you do now. Would you agree? Maybe slightly. Obviously, there would be a little bit of a kick, but it's not like overnight Styx becomes a stadium band.
I don't think anyone knows that for sure, but... I mean,
but for you, it's not worth the...
Well, as Tommy said, we got the band back together, and we sold 15,000 tickets a night across. We were headlining arenas, in sheds. But then Dennis limited us to 40 shows the next year because he was going to be doing some other project. It wasn't like the band was his main focus. He still was writing musical theater pieces.
Right.
To our detriment.
Right. Let's talk to Paul, who's in Tennessee. Hey, Paul, you're on with the guys in Styx.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Hey, Paul.
Very well, Paul. How are you doing?
Good. Thank you. Doing great. I've been enjoying this whole conversation. I didn't realize it's now my turn, and I forgot what I was going to ask you. What has kept Styx going all these years? What's the thing that's held you? Is it the music? Is it the camaraderie? What has it?
It's clearly Tommy's desire to make it into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame while he's still alive. We've established that. It's clearly the driver in stakes going on for 50 years.
And I feel great.
And he looks great. Son of a bitch found the fountain of youth. I don't know when or how, but I need to... I need some of the vitamins or whatever you take, Tommy, because it's crazy.
The reality is that, you know, you find something that you really love to do as a career, and you will never work a day in your life. This is an incredible joy, and I mean, we spent 13 years not having this, and then now it's like we've been doing this a long time, and I still love being on stage with Tommy Shaw and Lawrence Gowan and Todd Zuckerman and Ricky Phillips and Chuck Panazza when he's there.
It's not work. It's just it's
joyful.
It's joyful. At the end of the day, we get to go up and play this music for however long we're playing that evening, you know, from 90 minutes to 2 hours or whatever. And it's medicine, man. It's great medicine.
When it becomes work, that's when the drama and the tension and the problems come in. And you can see that in bands when you go see them.
Yeah.
You can see that. I mean, you guys have all, I'm sure, at stages in your careers lived through that. And that's just...
You take the joy out of it, and it doesn't lead to good things.
Yeah. Yeah. Can you guys hang for a few more calls? Are we good?
Sure.
All right,
sure.
Good. We'll go real quick with a couple quick more phone calls, then I'll let you guys get on your way so you can catch your plane. Let's talk to, we got some people waiting over an hour, so let's get them in real quick. This is Jay in Texas. Go ahead, Jay, you're on with Sticks.
Hey, thrill to be on the air with you guys.
Hey, Jay.
One of the best concerts I've ever attended live was those series of shows you guys did down in New Orleans, which eventually was put on vinyl for Caught in the Act. I've got that still. And I was wondering if you guys would be open to reflecting on those shows and that tour. And then have they ever transferred it from VHS to DVD and Blu-ray? Because I'd love to get a copy of that. Thank you very much.
I honestly don't think they have. I mean, I've got the VHS of that. Jerry Kramer may still have the original video masters, although, I mean, it's probably on analog tape.
Probably.
And that could be shedding by now. It's probably the... You know, we're far removed from that, and it's how many years ago? 34 years ago. I don't know that we did videotape there, didn't we? That's where we videotaped it. I guess we'll have to check into that. Thanks for asking the question.
Thank you, Jay. Appreciate it. Tim in Florida. Tim, you've been waiting over an hour. Appreciate that. Thank you. Go ahead. You're on with Sticks.
Was plexiglass toilet Dennis DeYoung's idea?
No. That was John Serluski.
Down on the plexiglass toilet.
Yeah, John Serluski. Wipe the butt clean with the papers. Make it nice for everyone. And don't sit down on the plexiglass toilet. Yeah.
Clue me in on this. What happened here?
No, well, that song was number one on Dr. Demento, I think, for a year straight.
What year?
I don't know when Demento discovered it. That was out on our third album called The Serpent Is Rising. It was before Tommy was in the band.
You recorded that?
John Serluski, yeah.
It's on the record.
It's on the record. You can buy
it
today.
You just stumped the trunk. I had no idea.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Toilet, man.
And it was just, I mean, John Serluski was a uniquely talented individual. And ultimately, he was a crazy, wonderful guy, but he was, you know, he was not happy in the framework of the band when he left in early December, and which opened the door for Tommy Shaw to walk in. He had a very quirky side to him, and which at times was incredibly entertaining, but it also led him astray in some ways, so... but no, Dennis DeYoung had nothing to do with that.
Did you guys play? Have you guys ever played it live?
I don't think so.
We've sung it backstage, and it's been on social media.
You sung it just now. We just had an impromptu performance. You know, it is.
It's a fun thing.
It is.
Boy grows up to eat the enchiladas with the sauce that burns the heart. Family comes to visit. Family, mama said, don't belch and fart.
And sounds like it does have a bit of a reggae feel to it from what I'm picking like up. A little bit of a steel drum in the background.
Steel drum, absolutely. Yes. Yes. Number one on Dr. Yes. Demento for almost a year solid.
Wow. Ricky in Maryland. Go ahead, Rick. You're on with Sticks.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
We're good.
Good.
Well. Awesome. Hey, big fan, been a fan. Well, let's put it this way. I've got 8 tracks still from you guys.
Wow.
Yeah. 8 tracks will make a comeback, too. Hold on to them. Vinyl's back. Cassette's coming back. 8 tracks coming back. Open reel. They made their record on 2-inch. It's all coming back. Hold on to all of it.
Got it. You got it,
Blacklight posters. They're all coming.
Yep.
So you guys with Felder and Forner, I think it was about a year and a half ago.
2014, yeah.
And I've got... tickets to the show coming up here in about 2 months, 3 months in Virginia.
I think it's beautiful.
Awesome. Yes, sir. And cause I'm the guy, I'm the guilty guy that was bringing up the damn Yankees thing.
the final guy. Well, I just completed the reunion in the last 6 weeks. The reunion has happened on this show, at least all individually, but Tommy was the final piece.
So, exactly. So my question to you, Tommy, is if the stars were aligned and everybody was able to do it, would you be willing to do a one-off with the damn Yankees?
Well, it would be what – how would the stars align? The problem is we book our year in advance, and so everything is all laid out. And you have to balance your off time with how many days away that you're gone. And I just did – two years of working on the off time, so very careful to commit to any other thing other than doing Sticks right now. But at the same time, never saying no to that because there was no reason to say no to it. It's just that Sticks became the center focus of the music that I play, and now we have a new album out. So it's hard to think of the time when I would be available and when they would be available. In a perfect situation, if we had some time and everybody was off and it wasn't infringing on anybody, sure, there's no reason not to play together.
And actually, the other three guys have all pretty much said the same thing. You know, yeah. Jack's out with Night Ranger. They just put out a new record, and Ted's either hunting or touring, and Michael's doing art, and Leonard Skinner. So everybody's got their thing, and it's just finding
the time in between there because, you know, it's hard.
Real quick, Jerry in Arkansas. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi, guys. I have seen you guys the last 3 years. Best concert ever in Little Rock.
Thank you.
At the State Fair. Fourth Row Dead Center. It was awesome.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Please continue to make DVDs because I have bought 6 or 7 of you guys with Contemporary Youth Orchestra. And last thing, I live in Nashville, Arkansas. Y'all perform there. Back, I think it was 73.
Probably was, yeah.
Nashville's only like 4,500 people, so that's pretty awesome. My wife and I just love you guys.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you very much.
Great to hear.
Thank you, Jerry. I think that's a good way to end it. And also, I don't want your management to kill me, and I don't want you to miss your plane. So I apologize to the other calls we didn't have time to get to. But by all means, anytime any of you guys want to come in and sit in, you're always welcome anytime. You used to live in New York, right, Tommy?
I did.
In the city for a while, right?
I lived here in the late 80s.
Yeah. So, but anybody, anytime you're passing through, hit me up. Come hang out anytime. It's always great to see you. Good luck with the new record, The Mission. Again, everybody, it's out June 16th. Buy and support new music from all these bands. If you want them to keep making it, get out there and buy it. You might not hear it on your classic rock radio station, unfortunately, but it's out there. Buy it, support it, and pre-order the new Sticks right now. June 16th, it's out, and you can pre-order wherever you buy music. So you don't forget about it. It shows up on the day it comes out. Beautiful. Well, great having Tommy Shaw, James Young, and Lawrence Gowan of Styx in the studio. Check out the band's upcoming new record. Big tour going out this summer with REO Speedwagon as well. As a matter of fact, I have a new interview with Kevin Cronin of REO. I'll post that up for you sometime in the next week or two as well here on the Eddie Trunk Podcast. Keep an eye on everything I've got going on my social media. Most active on Twitter, at Eddie Trunk, Instagram, at Eddie Trunk. EddieTrunk.com is the website, Facebook, fan page, Eddie Trunk as well. Thanks to Katie Irizarry. She's the producer of the Eddie Trunk podcast. I'll see you guys again next Thursday for another all-new episode, as always, free on iTunes at PodcastOne.com.
Shaq, with the NBA Finals in full gear, you know we're all over it on the big podcast with Shaq. Can the King bring another title to the land, or will Steph and KD make history again? We got a cover like no one else, plus the biggest guests from sports and entertainment, tons of laughs, and the top stories every week, all summer long. Just go ahead and crown those champs. The big podcast with Shaq, with a new episode every Monday at Podcast One.
Hey there. I host a show called Therapy Gecko, where I dress up as a lizard and talk to anonymous strangers from the internet about their lives. They tell me their relationship problems.
I found out that I was related to the guy that I was dating.
Their hobbies.
I collect my roommate's toenails and fingernails.
Their secrets.
When we did not have toilet paper, I would use the shower curtain.
And also sometimes kind of serious stuff.
I have anxiety when I talk to people.
I'm also sometimes joined by celebrity guests like Doja Cat, Lil Yachty, Bobby Lee, and Eric Andre. Some of the more interesting calls we've gotten recently include a guy who argued with a demon living on his wall, a caller drunk at his job at a middle school, and a caller wondering whether or not he should transform into a dog. So if you're sick of your own life and you want to get lost in the life of a stranger, search for Therapy Gecko wherever you get your podcasts.